right, welcome everyone. This is episode 7 of Music for the Quarantine Soul, and my co-pilot Clifton is here as always.
Hello, hello. We're trucking along.
We are indeed. We're kind of taking a bit of a hiatus here with the good weather. We've had a hard time trying to find time getting together here. So it was easier when it was poor weather out. We were just sitting around looking out the window kind of thing. But yeah. Now it's nice we're getting out. So today we are joined by our friend Carter Van Alstyne, another local Dauphin music aficionado and fellow podcaster as well. So welcome, Carter.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm glad I was introduced as a fellow podcaster. There's not very many of us in Dauphin, so we're a rare breed.
We are.
Yeah. And when you guys hit it big there, I'm going to have to take some credit for, because it was like a couple days into this whole thing, and Cam was on our podcast, Here Comes Some Wisdom, and me and Trevor think to this day that Cam liked it so much that he started a podcast.
you guys are like responsible. Oh, it's just one podcast. It won't lead to anything, right?
Ugh. And I wasn't going to call him by his name. That was my goal. And here I am within a minute. Because Cam, the last couple episodes, Cam Levi, just Trevor this, Trevor that. And Jeff last week, Trevor, yeah. Trevor, you know. So
yeah. Trevor's our first guest, and he seems to be mentioned almost every episode.
He looms large.
He's like, I was going to say he's like the bad BO in that Seinfeld episode, but that would be rude if I said that. So I'm not going to say that. Well, we're here to talk music. So we could talk forever about Trevor Sitnick. let's talk music here. So Carter, you've got, I was introduced to some very different music here, as many episodes have been that way.
Yeah, I tried to keep it mainstream there, but...
Well, it's whatever you want, man. There's only a couple rules around here, so...
Okay.
And you've been a long-time listener, as they like to say.
Yeah, first-time caller. Long-time listener.
So you know how it goes, so you pick one and let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, so first I'll start off with Replacements, Let It Be, from 1984. Yeah. Have either of you guys really heard the Replacements before, or...
I've heard of the band, but yeah. I certainly could not name a song. And if you played me 5 random tracks of bands I'd never heard of, I couldn't identify them.
I couldn't either. No, I mean, I may have come across them back in the day, but yeah, this was something that I haven't heard for a long time.
I'm a little embarrassed because when I checked it out, this album was 1984. So, like, I mean, what was I doing?
That was in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was probably listening to mainstream stuff at that time.
Yeah. My first thought was, how did you come across this album from 1984?
Oh, well, just a lot of people influenced by them, like the Goo Goo Dolls. Their first albums were just basically ripping off the Replacements. And I know, Clifton, you like Guns N' Roses. When Duff left the band in 98, mm-hmm. Tommy Stinson, the Replacements bass player, he took over from 98 until, I guess, Duff came back there.
Yeah.
So... they're always sort of around in bands that I liked. And then I finally delved in and started listening to them. And I'd say they are probably my favorite band.
Wow.
A lot of their catalog is not good, though. I don't think so. But they're a flawed band, to say the least. But they're, you know, in the area, they're from Minneapolis. They're started off as a punk band in 79. And then around maybe the album before this, they started slowing down a little bit there. Paul Westerberg is their sort of creative genius behind the band. He said, you know, a punk song is a riff with a message. We want to get into writing mm-hmm. songs.
Mm-hmm.
So
and you say a flawed band, but when you're a punk rock band, that's what you strive on.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's organized chaos.
Yeah. And so I guess even the album title shows a little bit of their punk heritage there. Let It Be, you know, that's that's sacred ground, but their role is nothing sacred. So they sort of did it to make their manager mad, who was a Beatles big fan.
Mm. It wasn't a nod or homage to the Beatles.
It was sort of a face of. Gotcha. But I said it's kind of mainstream. This album was number 241 on Rolling Stone's top 500 albums of all time. Mm. And then their follow-up, Tim, their major label debut, was number 136. But I think this one's better. Tim's got more hits, if you could call it a hit. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think this one's a little bit more pure there. Mm. So I don't know, like even the album art there, just them sitting on a roof. That's the Stinson family home. There's Bob Stinson, the lead guitar player, and Tommy Stinson, the bass player there who was with Guns N' Roses. They're just sitting on their roof. Tommy, I think, was in the 11th grade at this time. So pretty young. And I guess when he started the band, he was in the 7th grade. So it was a little awkward playing clubs when you're, you know, 12 years old.
There's certainly lots of stories of people being too young to play in the bars, but I think that might be one of the youngest ones.
that's one of the youngest I've ever heard.
He's big though, like he's tall dude, so he sort of fake it. But they're kind of legendarily, their live shows are pretty bad throughout this time. Just too drunk and just don't care, which is a lethally bad combination. Be like, hey, we're doing covers tonight. It's like, what? The most famous of all was their big break, SNL, 1986. Some band canceled, so hey, who better to replace them than the Replacements?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, first time on TV, and last one for 3 years there. after, you know, SNL, you get 2 songs.
Yeah.
In between, Lorne Michaels breaks into the dressing room and says, you guys are never playing again.
I did read that, yeah.
Yeah, and then they later trashed a hotel room, and Lorne got another $1,100 bill, and so he threatened to ban, like, all Warner Brothers acts for some time. Oh. But they did everything wrong. Paul missed parts singing in the pre-show. Bob missed his solo, so Paul this time made sure Bob didn't miss it, so he screamed, come on, you blanker, live TV. yeah.
I'll have to YouTube that up and check that out.
It's not on YouTube, but it's on Daily Motion.
Okay.
That you can search and it'll find it. And the first song they play is Bastards of Young. And the first line of that's God, what a mess. And that's what the video is called, because it is like, God.
It's a mess.
This is their big break, and they messed it up royally. So, but yeah, they broke up in 91. Bob died in 95. They got back together in 2014 to do like Coachella, and that's where I saw them. I saw them in Minneapolis.
Oh yeah,
down show in 2014, and maybe the best concert. Just the vibe of it was so good, because you know, like the Winnipeg Gold Eyes minor league baseball.
Yeah.
So they play against the St. Paul Saints there, and so the St. Paul Saints were closing down their stadium and had a beautiful one next door, but that's where the Replacement State played. In a closing down minor league baseball field, which is just, I don't know, their vibe there.
Yeah,
no kidding.
It's, cool. It's pretty fitting of them.
That's my dream.
So yeah, this is their last, Let It Be is the last indie release they had. And it's pretty raw album, I think. Like it's the production values aren't that good. Yeah. There's mistakes in it. So it's flawed though, like them. I think, and it sort of peters out at the end, like a lot of albums. But so this one starts off pretty strong. I Will Dare is a pretty springy pop song with not too much punk elements there. Mm. And then Favorite Thing is the second song. And it sort of embodies their genre, which is post-punk. Sort of, it's not too loud, but it's sort of got some punk sensibilities associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get into some more louder punk songs, and then Androgynous starts, and it's a piano ballad there, which is pretty unheard of for like a post-punk band. It's just talking about gender fluidity and everything like that. It's kind of...
And I was listening to this album the other day, and mm-hmm. I hear the song come on. I'm like, hang on, I know these lyrics. What is this? And it kind of made me stop and think, and I'm listening, and I'm like, I know this song. What the heck is this? Is this a cover? No, it can't be a cover. I know this song. This is Crash Test Dummies. And
I haven't heard the Crash Test song.
I did not know. I thought that was a Crash Test Dummies song. I was not aware that that was a cover. So that was a nice little treat for me.
I've never heard the Crash Test version. No, I should though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure it's a little bit more put together.
I mean, that was actually, I think maybe that was on the Crash Test Dummies debut or their EP, so it might have that would have been rougher production, a little bit kind of thing. But yeah, check them out; it's good.
Yeah. Then, sort of after that, the album starts to go a little ugh. They do a Kiss cover, "Black Diamond," which is one of my favorite Kiss songs. That and Strutter off their debut, there, great. But this version just—it's not good. It's really not good, and. And then they follow it up with Unsatisfied, which is probably the most famous song on the record.
Okay.
It's even in like movies like Adventureland and just sort of coming of age movies in the 80s, you'll hear it in the soundtrack there, where it's a pretty raw song. Paul's just yelling a question. Look me in the eyes and tell me that you're satisfied. I'm so unsatisfied. Like, it's teen angst and whatnot.
Yeah. Mm.
And unusually, my favorite song's probably Senior Video. It's almost an instrumental. It's about MTV and phony rock and roll. It's got a sample of All Day, All Night, you know, MTV, and just like some random noise, trumpet and piano, and Paul just starts yelling, Senior Video, your phony rock and roll, probably the stuff that Cam was listening to in 84.
Yeah.
No, just yeah. Some REO Speedwagon.
Something like that, yeah. Perfect. Supertramp, maybe.
You know, that's true. You know how many Supertramp albums I have?
2.5.
I have two. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah, I inherited those from Dad.
There you go.
Chris Jewett wasn't lying.
No, yeah. I checked. I've got two. So someone, that's two guys with two. Yeah. So there's got to be a few more guys with three around. So,
yeah. So my favorite band, not my favorite album, just probably their best. But if you put their everything together, then in their vibe, then they're probably my favorite band.
Cool.
But, yeah.
I have to say, I haven't delved into their catalog at all. So when I don't have some time and I don't have people sending me new ones to listen to because of the podcast, I'll.
Yeah, you guys have a tough go of it. Like, you get a lot of, hey, you got to listen to this by this weekend. Like, it's work. Yeah. It's honestly work for you guys. And heaven forbid if it's not good. And I hope that I'm not contributing to that.
I've never turned one off after one or two. There's certainly some where I run out of time and I'll only listen to 2/3 of it. But
yeah, that's why I send some Cole's notes there. Like, hey, because I don't know.
Yeah, going back to that Androgynous, yeah, you're right, Cam. It's off the debut album of the Crash Test Dummies, The Ghosts That Haunt Me.
Yeah, that's a great album. Love it.
Okay, I only know about two Crash Test Dummy songs, so I need to get on that.
Yeah.
I remember the drummer came and talked to us back in high school.
Yeah. He was here just recently, too.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
He made fun of my haircut.
That's the best quarantine haircut, though, I've seen yet, so.
Thanks. Had a couple haircuts since. All right, so let's move on here, Carter.
Yeah, next up is something a little bit more recent, Butch Walker and the Black Widows, The Spade.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think Butch is the best kept secret in music.
This was very interesting. I'd never even heard this name before.
And neither have I.
Yeah, he's had an interesting career. He's got an autobiography, a documentary, which is pretty unusual for someone of his level of popularity to have those things. Mm-hmm. But he's just literally done it all. He got his start in a hair metal band in the late 80s called South Gang. They were okay. Not the best. But Desmond Child, who everyone knows, right? Bon Jovi. Mm-hmm. He was like writing the songs for the album, helping him out. And so he sort of just, you know, learned the trade that way through one of the best, Desmond Child there. Obviously, hair metal came and went. So next was the Marvelous Three in the late 90s, which was like a power pop rock band, but the best one of it. And they had a big hit, Freak of the Week, which is also probably their worst song, if you've ever, I don't know, I'm not a fan of it. But they put out three albums and they're really, really good. But not that much success again. Even though they're fantastic, I almost picked one of them. So he started writing and producing for other people, sort of mostly in pop there. So he's done work with Taylor Swift, Katy Perry, Avril Lavigne, Pink.
Oh, yeah.
So pretty big producer. A big tour this year was going to be a stadium show with Green Day, Weezer, and Fall Out Boy. And he's executive produced albums for all three of them. Like Green Day's album that came out this year, he was the guy on that one.
Oh, yeah.
So he does a lot. Cam, you said two episodes ago you like the Struts' second album.
Yeah.
He's got producer, composer, engineering credits on that.
Oh, wow.
Too. Like, cool. I didn't even know that till yesterday. I was like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. And like the Wombats, I didn't know he did work on that album. He just literally does it all. But I think he saves his best stuff for his solo work that goes unnoticed.
I've never heard of this guy.
Yeah, he pays the bills, let me tell you, with that production. And then
and yeah. does what he wants.
And it's weird too, because he's a good looking guy. He's got a like the best voice, I think, live, like compared to the record.
Yeah.
He's got famous friends that help him out. Like on this album, there's a song called Synthesizers, and the video of it is Matthew McConaughey reprising his Wooderson role. Like
Days of Confused.
Yeah, from Days of Confused. And Alec Baldwin had him on his podcast playing songs this month. like he's getting exposure, and it just doesn't work out.
Doesn't seem it
makes no sense that neither Cam or I have heard of this guy.
Yeah, that's... It's like he's living in an alternate universe kind of thing. Or kind of.
Yeah, I've seen him twice in Chicago and Winnipeg. I actually met him in Chicago, too. Yeah? Got some autographs and talked about Winnipeg, see if he was ever coming back, which he did, which was good.
Yeah.
And the thing I like about him, too, is he's obviously an amazing guitar player, getting his chops from the hair metal days.
Yeah.
But he's super reserved. This album's a little dirtier, a little bit more slide guitar and stuff. But his stuff in the mid 2000s was a lot of acoustic fingerprint picked stuff. But I like to refer to him as a guy who drives like a '94 Honda Civic, but it's got a Ferrari in the garage just in case. Because obviously the guy was a top notch shredder back in the day, and he still keeps it up. So yeah, this album's a bit. I don't know, this album, it doesn't have really any of his best songs, but I think it's consistent all the way through. It's a bit grimy. It's just basic Butch, I think. Like, he's got a new concept album that just came out this month. It's written from the perspective of, like, a Make America Great Again bigot who turns his life around, set to a soundtrack that is reminiscent of the early 80s FM radio, like Fleetwood Mac and stuff that. It's really cool, but it's not basic. Like, it's pretty weird. Like, some, like, the songs are like 6 foot middle-aged American man and stuff like that. Yeah. Or when his father died, he wrote an album about that, you know, that's pretty depressing. And it's a slow one. So this is just like the most basic one of them all.
This was the first one I listened to. And I was just like, oh, this is good. It's kind of like a rock band kind of thing that you're like, how did I not hear these guys? Like, what the heck? Like, this is good stuff. And it's nothing sort of jumps at you. Oh, I know this song. I've heard this because I haven't. But it was like, hey, this is good.
Yeah. No, it's, and everyone who listens likes it, but he just can't make it big.
Can't,
I think sometimes you have to be within the frequency. So, you know, I think when you're in a certain area and a demographic of radio stations that play certain artists, and if you're within those that boundary, then you'll hear this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that this guy's ever made it. It'd be neat to see if he's ever played a CKDM, been on CKDM at all.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't think so, but
we should have requested him. It was, I heard requested.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Get Bruce on the line. So
we'll get it going.
So he's like a songwriter, of course, but the interesting one about an exclusive to this album is it's a true band effort there with the Black Widows. There's actually like a few songs on this album that he doesn't have a writing credit for, which is extremely weird because like he writes for other people, and every album he's ever done has been 100% written by him. And then here, part of the other guys in the band would do a song here and there, so it's pretty weird. But I don't know, it's pop rock with a bit of an edge, I think. Slide guitars, and Butch is the only lyricist I like in all of music. I just don't pay attention to lyrics. I have an inability of remembering lyrics. I don't care for lyrics, but I like Butch's lyrics. My favorite one on the album is smothering the cover of a 69 Summer played through a speaker of fuzz. Nobody knew Bryan Adams wasn't cool. The TV just told me he was. Which, recent events, Bryan Adams sort of showing that a little bit more.
a little bit that he's not so cool indeed.
Yeah.
Which was clairvoyant.
Yeah.
So how did you stumble across this guy, Kurt?
Yeah.
Oh, he shall not be named. He's a big Marvelous 3 fan. Yeah. Okay. The shadow looms large.
So you had mentioned earlier Desmond Child. So this guy kind of, he walks in the same, you know, this the same lane that Desmond Child does. So Desmond Child is known for big hits by Bon Jovi, Alice Cooper, right? Poison, Aerosmith. Like he wrote those songs, some of their biggest hits.
Yep.
And so that this is what that Butch Walker is doing. Is
yeah, song, sort of turn
songwriter first for these big artists, and just having fun doing his thing on the side.
Yeah, and I've got a good playlist of Butch songs where, like, even like back in the early 2000s, like SR-71, not a good band, but a really good song. Turns out, why? Butch did it. Injected. I don't think they had anything, but they had a good song. Butch did it. You know, it's sort of like, or even like, why do I like this Pink song? Butch.
Wow. Yeah. Nice. I'll have to start digging into that.
Yeah. The one that came out this month is good. The concept album. It's interesting. It's like I said, it's some serious dark material, but set to a very sunny musical soundtrack.
There. And is it credited to the Black Widows as well? Or
no, he's only done two with the Black Widows. There, yeah. He's got the Let's Go Out Tonights, which is more of a David Bowie style of like from 2004. That's a good one too. And Sycamore Meadows from 2008 is maybe the second best one there. He was renting Fleas from Red Hot Chili Peppers' house there, and it burned down in the California wildfires there. And he lost like an album and all his cars and all his possessions and stuff. So,
wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. If I had to pick a deep cut on here, it'd be The Closest Thing to You I'll Never Know. It's got a good build. It's pedal steel, which you can't go wrong with.
Yeah.
That would be the one that I'd ask on CKDM there. Okay. For the farmers in the fields, put that one out there.
Okay, well, so on such an unknown album, if you will, what would be the hit? Like, okay, you talked about a deep cut there, but what would be...
Probably Summer of 89 and Synthesizers, just because they made videos for those. But okay. I don't know. I don't know if it's hit if nobody watches them.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
McConaughey reprising his most famous role, you think that would get on MTV, but...
Yeah.
Guess not.
Like I saw that Butch himself plays a ton of instruments on this album too.
Yeah,
guitars, piano, banjo, mandolin, percussion.
He's a
talented guy.
Yeah, he's. I forgot to mention he's even got his own guitar pedal, the Ruby Red pedal. That is a little out of my price range. Guitar pedals are expensive these days.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I had an extra $400 lying around, I'd get a used one of that, but
cool.
And live, like when I saw him in Chicago, it was a full band. In Winnipeg, it was just solo, and I wasn't sure what that would be. And he'd come out there with like a bass drum with the kick pedal on it, and you'd be like, "Oh, this is gonna be lame." But I think I might actually have preferred that to the full band almost.
It is cool when artists are able to pull that off.
Yeah. Yeah, not everyone can, but no. When they can, it's something special.
Well, there. I guess if he's got good songs, like you say, then that helps.
Yeah, sort of the problem with him too is we don't see eye to eye on his material. The stuff he doesn't like is the stuff I like the more. So,
oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Huh. Oh well.
Okay. What do you got next?
Next is, this is maybe a different one here, but Sufjan Stevens, Illinois, from 2005.
This was different.
Have either of you heard of this?
I have never heard of this guy.
No. Never heard of this guy either.
It was pretty big at the time in 2005. It was on Metacritic. It was the number one positively reviewed album of the year.
Yeah.
Rolling Stone at the time it gave it a lot of coverage there as well. But Sufjan, and that's a tough one to pronounce. It's because it's spelled Sufjan, basically. Yeah.
I'm glad you pronounced it because I wasn't even going to try.
Yeah. He's a classically trained oboist.
I think I did read that. Yeah,
weird, very weird. And he has some bad albums out there. Enjoy Your Rabbit, which is the one before. It's just electronic noises, like no vocals. It's just like bleep bloop bloop bleep bloop. Or he's very religious, so his other albums will be like Christian albums there, or. Like they get strange, his albums. Or he'll release like a 3 CD Christmas album, like 3 discs. Oh. Like holy moly! Okay. But what he's most famous for is the 50 State Project there. So yeah. He released an album about Michigan in 2003, and then this Illinois one in 2005, where basically he does a book report on state history, people, places, events. And
isn't there like a song about John Wayne Gacy or something or other?
It's impossible to have a discussion of the album not involving that. Every review, every interview always mentions John Wayne Gacy here, which I forgot. I've got all these vinyls here, but this is probably my favorite vinyl too there. And there's John Wayne in his clown outfit.
It's okay.
Kind of creepy. So yeah, John Wayne Gacy is one of the people in this like 20 song album who he was a serial killer there in Illinois who dressed as a clown and buried the bodies of his young victims under his house. The song's pretty controversial because it kind of humanizes him. Like, right. I'm just like him, some of the lyrics are. So it's a creepy vibe. It's, but like, I put this on the coolest notes, but I wouldn't probably, it's not one of my favorites on the album, but like I said, every discussion of this album has to discuss that.
Well, it's just so sort of striking, you know?
Yeah.
What?
And this is 2005 too. Like now serial killers are all the rage on Netflix there and everything. But back then, a little bit more taboo topic.
Yeah.
And the album kind of starts off a little strange there too. It's slow and piano, and you sort of thinking maybe one of the more jumpier songs would start off with. And it's like pretty pretentious album too, almost I'd say. Like song number two is titled "The Black Hawk War," or "How to Demolish an Entire Civilization and Still Feel Good About Yourself in the Morning," or "We apologize for the inconvenience, but you're going to have to leave now," or "I have fought the big knives and will continue to fight them until they are off our lands." So that's song number two. You know, so it's I don't know. I think it's tough for first timers to get into the
album. Real hard time getting into this one. I listened to it for a while. I was doing something. I was glad that I was not just sitting and listening. I was doing something else because I would have given up after three or four songs if I was just sitting listening.
When I pulled it up also, I found one of the covers with, and it says the original cover of Illinois was Superman. The one that you have has balloons.
Yeah, to cover up Superman. DC got a little litigious there.
Yeah.
Metropolis was, so Superman was created by, we've all seen the Heritage Moment, right?
Yeah.
By Canadians there, Schuster and, Siegel and Schuster.
Yeah.
But Metropolis was sort of based on Chicago there. So he's got the Man of Steel song there. And so he's got Al Capone, the Sears Tower, and Superman was on there, but not anymore.
Not anymore.
Not
anymore. I think when they re-released it, they went with another superhero I read somewhere. I don't remember the...
A minor Marvel character there on the 2015 release. So I'm glad I got this one before that there because not as pure. No. Oh well. And so this one was kind of a miss for you guys there.
Yeah, it didn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I thought this one might. This is my favorite album of all time. I think it's everything an album should be. It's just it's got a concept and it doesn't really lean into it too hard. It just will sort of touch on things like my favorite song is probably Casimir Pulaski Day, which is sort of like an Illinois exclusive holiday in early March.
I know that name.
Yeah?
I can't remember. I was in Chicago for a weekend a couple years back, and I know that name, so I'm going to have to check that out.
So, like, the song's about, like, young love halted by a terminal bone cancer diagnosis, but one of the lyrics is like, oh, in the 1st of May on the holiday. And, like, that's the only reference of it, so he's sort of cheating there, but... I just love the arrangement of the album and the instrumentation. He is literally playing like every instrument,
and he recorded it kind of lo-fi too, right?
Yeah, on an 8-track, I think there, which is pretty hard to believe. But in the album liner notes, it said all arrangements were painstakingly done himself, and it's a good quarantine album because he was pretty isolated at the time too. He just didn't really leave the apartment. Just till he hammered it all out there. Later, he came out. The 50 state project was a joke for promotional reasons there. He had no real intention on carrying it through, because that's, it got so much press there at the time too, saying, well, if he does one every 2 years, how is he going to get all 50 done? You know, just like,
and who's he going to leave?
And he's just laughing like, well, this is the one artist I haven't seen live. On my five, and I don't really have too much of a desire to either. I don't think it would be that good. I don't know, like, because it would literally be like, well, time for bleeps and bloops for the next 45 minutes. There's a chance of that, but
it's just to clean the palate.
Yeah, but even things that you think would be amiss with him are pretty big. I like him. Like, he released an album with a couple other guys in 2014 under the moniker Sisyphus there. And it's a hip hop album, which, you know, this guy with his soft voice and weird instrumentation and oboe making hip hop. It's surprisingly good. You got the rappers, and then he'll be like playing the Rihanna role there, you know, doing the chorus kind of thing like that. And it's better than I'm making it sound. It's actually pretty good, I think. But it's one of those, you know, he's not talking about how much money he makes in something. It was actually based on an art gallery or an artist or something, the entire album. So, again, pretty pretentious.
Okay. Well, when I have more time again, I'll... how am I going to have more time than when I've had the last one?
Right now, this is it.
What am I saying? This is it.
Sufjan's in and out, yeah. But maybe one of the listeners will like it there.
Who knows? Yeah.
Like...
how do you say his name again?
Sufjan
Stevens.
Yeah. Because, it's, you know, best of the decades list, best of 2005 and stuff.
Is that his real name, or is that a stage name, you know?
No, that's his real one as far as I know there. And then, like, 2015, he'll write about his, like, Carrie and Lowell, about his parents and stuff. Like, yeah, weird guy, but anyways.
Yeah.
So okay. Next, I guess I'll get to the hit of all the albums here. You guys have obviously heard, either it all the way through, or at least, you know, Mysterious Ways and One, right?
Mm-hmm. Big band.
I've definitely listened to this one all the way through many times. It's probably in my, certainly in my top 25 kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic.
Oh yeah, no. Jeff last week mentioned Tom Petty's left turn on Wildflowers. This is U2's, you know, less politics, less anthems, more experimental, and
right.
Most of the time, you fall on your face if you stop doing what you've been doing for the decade. But they didn't. They kept it going there, and I especially like this is sort of like the Edge and Larry Mullen Jr.'s album. There, the drumming is it's different.
Well, they used a lot of drum, like originally there was going to be a lot of drum machines and stuff. And Larry Mullen was not happy. He thought he was going to kind of be pushed aside a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I admit that I do not know much of the strife behind, because I know that they came close to breaking up here. I haven't really looked into that too much there. I should have. Sorry. But I don't know. Especially the Edge is one of my favorite guitar players, and this is his album there.
Yeah.
So Clifton as the guitar player, which famous guitar player's rig would you most like to play through there, basically?
You know what? I would be very wary of getting anywhere near the Edge's rig. I believe it's probably... this is where AI incarnates is with his rig. I think he has such a, like, this is IBM for a guitar player's rig. He's got a lot of digital stuff, and where would you even begin? I mean, you plug in the guitar, but he's so contemporary with that kind of stuff that...
Yeah.
That's what makes U2, like, the sound of U2. It's a component, but I mean it's a big component, and the Edge is definitely one of the, you know, great guitar players of our time.
Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where I feel like there's stuff from the 2010s is sort of a little bit behind. Guitar work just sort of seems a bit lazy to me almost. Like, it's like, oh, hey, straightforward. No, you know, no, none of the edge isms that you've come to expect. Almost.
Right. It's kind of interesting. This one is certainly, like you said, Carter, it's a left turn for them. And I was a pretty big U2 fan back in 1984 when I should have been listening to The Replacements.
No, Unforgettable Fire was 84. Yeah.
I remember hearing U2 for the first time, War and Boy, and those early.
Those are really early. Yeah.
I remember seeing those real early on. I don't know if they were on vinyl. I can't remember when I saw them, but I certainly remember hearing them for the first time and certainly seeing the videos. And then this one I bought because I was a U2 fan and I liked it. But then after this, I kind of dropped them in the 90s kind of thing.
Yeah, Zeropa isn't that good. Pop, which is almost like their full-on electronica dance album. I enjoy half the songs on there that are really good. But and then they got back to basics there in 2000 with All You Can't Leave Behind there.
Yeah,
and their next two albums were really good. So, but yeah, this, I guess they made a left turn on this one and they went into the ditch on the next one almost. Yeah.
Well, and I haven't listened to the next one there after this too much to sort of be able to compare it, but
there's no hits.
Yeah, but 11. This one just seemed to roll. It just kept coming, right? There was
and you forget of all the songs too. You're like, oh yeah, here, and then it's like, oh, Who's Gonna Ride Your Wild Horse? Yep. Oh, that's on here, or The Fly. Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, that was the first single off of there, and it's almost forgotten now. Like, it didn't even make the greatest hits. From this decade.
Oh yeah,
and right. I think that solo on The Fly, just the phrasing there, is top three or top five of all time for me. Even though it's not technically like proficient, it just sounds good, which ultimately is, I guess, what you want there.
Yeah,
with you know, with music. So
yeah, it's definitely an interesting album. The whole German reunification and just the whole sort of backstory behind the whole thing. It's neat to read about. And
so the first bit was in Germany, right? And that's where sort of the fighting was taking place.
Yeah.
And then they got a bit better after they left Germany, I guess. Was it? Yeah. Is that?
They had multiple producers on this as well, like Daniel Lanois, Brian Eno.
Yeah. There's a lot on there.
Yeah.
The cat. We got a cat.
Hey, it's our first pet sound, I think. On
yeah.
I think we've had cookies coming out of the oven one time.
Yeah. Chevy's been pretty quiet, but she's sleeping.
Have either of you seen YouTube? Either of you seen YouTube live there in Winnipeg?
I saw them. I was very lucky. That was sort of the return to my concert going.
The 360 tour.
Yeah, a friend of mine is a fan club member, and she got us tickets, and it was at the old Winnipeg Stadium.
Yeah, I also joined the fan club to get my tickets.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a really good value, like $75, while my parents sat in the stands for $150 or something.
Right. I don't remember how much we paid, but we were at the stage end, the right end of the stadium.
Yeah.
And we were at the front row of the upper deck at the old Winnipeg Stadium, so I had, like, they were right in front of me. People would stand up and I could just sit and watch because it was, like, I had the best view. It was fantastic. Yeah, I really, really happy with those seats.
We were row two inside the stage there for $75. It was insane. Oh, yeah. Like, when Bono, like, you could smell Bono's, like, leather shoes or leather pants. It was crazy. They did leave some riffraff in, though, from... We thought we were pretty exclusive there, right. And then you see Teddy Ray and Jason Elf walk by.
Often riffraff at its finest.
Yeah. Jeez.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I hadn't listened to this album for quite a while, and I was sitting out in the deck this afternoon enjoying the sun, and I had it going, and I'd forgotten this kind of thing. I knew there was tons of hits and tons of even deep cuts that I liked that weren't necessarily singles kind of thing, but kind of. You just go, oh yeah, man, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
It's a good diagnostic record too. I bought the vinyl, I used my parents' system, and I've sort of repaired it over time, and it was a pretty good system back in the day. But just off the start, Zoo Station just did not sound right. You're like, well, it's missing a channel. Something's wrong. And I took the old multimeter to the cartridge on the turntable, and yeah, one channel's completely busted.
No,
I wouldn't have known if it weren't for Zoo Station there. But it's coming in the mail tomorrow, the new cartridge, so it's gonna sound better than ever.
It'll sound great. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's go to your last one here.
Yeah, so this is one that I thought wouldn't go over as well, because
I like this one.
Really? I would have pegged you as like, I shut it off after half a song.
No, really. I'm a closet ska fan.
Okay, so you know what ska is.
Because
I saw Real Big Fish last year for the third time, and nobody knew what ska or third wave ska was. So that's awesome.
What do you mean nobody? Like nobody at the concert
No. No, just everyone I talked to. Where are you going this week? Where are you going? You know, going to Real Big Fish. Who are they? There's Third Wave Ska Band. I don't even know what that is.
So, I love the horns. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah. So First Wave Ska is like sort of originated in Jamaica, and then Second Wave was in the UK. They're like the Beat, or as they're known here, the English Beat. Did it, and then the Third Wave is from Orange County, California, basically. And Real Big Fish is sort of like the leaders of the movement. And say Less Than Jake from Florida are sort of the only other equivalents, but they take themselves a little bit more seriously.
When did people think that this third wave ska started?
It was short. It was about a year, 2 year and a half. So between 96 and 98.
Okay.
Yeah. It left.
There was a band I saw in Winnipeg. I'm gonna hook you up, Carter, with the name that you can check out. It's called Me, Mum, and Morgenthaler.
No, I've got that written down. Yeah. You know, you've told me about them.
Oh yeah. They're Canadian Quebecois ska band, and they're awesome. I saw them
I didn't know there was a ska band there. I've got the name like literally written down.
Yeah.
Listen list.
Because as soon as I heard this, I'm like, oh, hey, Me, Mum, and Morgenthaler. Awesome.
if nobody understands exactly what we're talking about, would you consider, maybe people would understand this. No Doubt.
Yep.
Are they they're considered
a ska. They started off as a ska band there.
Okay. So now we've sort of have a.
Yeah, I'd say the most famous ska band might be Superman by Goldfinger, because it was the first song in the Tony Hawk Pro Skater soundtrack.
Okay.
But they're not really considered a ska band. But yeah, no, Gwen Stefani sort of on the earlier side. And in Real Big Fish's next album, the wonderfully titled Why Do They Rock So Hard, has a song, She Used to Be My Girl, But Now She's Famous, and that's about Gwen.
Oh. Yeah.
I liked the one song I liked was She Has a Girlfriend Now. I liked that one.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the ones that they play often live there.
Okay.
I guess the other thing, too, since we're talking about it, the style of music there, ska is sort of personified by the horn section, like you mentioned, as well as sort of the, when you play on a guitar, the downstroke, you aren't pressing down, so you get a dead note, and then on the upstroke, on your barcode, you play the bottom four strings, so it's a sort of and it's played quite slow in reggae, and in Aaron's case, the guitar player Real Big Fish, quite fast and proficiently. But yeah, they don't take themselves too serious. Obviously they have a pun in the name. Real Big Fish is spelled R-E-E-L, which is incredibly corny, and even the name of the album Turn the Radio Off is a homage to Lisa Loeb, if you remember her, Stay, that song in like 94 95. Yeah. In the breakdown, she's like, I turn the radio up, and this is just like, turn the radio off, like just super 90s cheese. But it's upbeat, cheerful music with sometimes dark, cynical lyrics, call and response with horns and guitar. And it's just like hair metal guitar riffs with pop punk power chords and sped up reggae. Like I said, dark, cynical lyrics. When I've seen them live 3 times in Winnipeg, after every, like almost every song, they'll be like, "Ha ha, that's a happy song," or what was it? You know, like just sinister. Most people don't know them, but what they do remember is, I'll be like, "Do you remember that movie Basketball with Trey Parker and Matt Stone from South Park?"
Yeah.
They're the house band.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Most people are like, oh, I know them. Yeah. This album itself, it's sort of a remake. When they were in high school, they had an album called Everything Sucks, which there's a song on this album called Everything Sucks, but it actually wasn't on the album Everything Sucks. But they were in high school, so it was a pretty rough demo. And so they re-recorded half the songs for this. They actually had quite a hit with MTV on the first song of the album, Sell Out, which I don't think is one of the best, but it's their big hit. And in subsequent albums, they have a song called One Hit Wonderful about themselves. But ska shows are a good time. They're you know, they're not punks. They're like goofy punks, the people in the crowd. Moshing sometimes. But mostly it's like dance moshing, which they refer to as skanking.
And I've actually seen like a couple times they've had Ukrainian bands at the local Ukrainian festival. And I would certainly consider them Ukrainian ska. I really enjoyed them.
Oh, okay. Awesome. And and like opening bands at ska shows are always good too. Like it's just a style of music that people can get into. It's not like, you know, at a heavy, like a pretty heavy metal show, you know, like if you don't know the song, sometimes the opening bands can get pretty rough, you know, like they're just heavy and it's just noise and it's just loud. And you're like, sometimes you aren't feeling it. Right. But it's pretty tough to hate a ska band. And it's, you know, working
although with Propaganda wrote one of their, you know, if any of these Propaganda fans out there that are listening, you know, Ska Sucks is one of their signature songs that they refused to play, and it was a joke and it just took off. So I meant to ask Jord after I heard this, I thought, oh, I should ask him if which band was the starting point for Ska Sucks.
Was that a late, that's a later one of their songs there?
No, it's one of the very early ones.
Yeah. So yeah, this might, that might predate this then.
It might. I'll have to check into that. I don't know.
It might be one of that first or second wave ska bands. So.
Yeah, I'll have to check. I'll find out for you.
Yeah, that's, that'd be cool. That'd be cool. But I don't know. Like most of their lyrics are just about other bands or the industry and stuff like that, which is, I don't know. They don't take themselves too seriously. But some of the lyrics are good, like on SR, whatever happened to Suburban Rhythm? Why did Ed Scott quit? You know how many times I've Googled that over the years to see if there's an answer? Why did Ed Scott quit?
Who is Ed Scott?
He was a guy in Suburban Rhythm, I guess. You know, that was just like probably never left the suburbs there in Orange County.
So basically these guys wrote a bunch of songs about inside jokes, really.
Yeah, so that's up my alley, I guess, right?
Yeah. Oddly enough, Propaganda started out an awful lot like that too. So
yeah. So it works out sometimes. But yeah, they're one hit. You can still tour 25 years later, basically, off of one hit. But I guess you sort of have to have a little bit of a cult following.
Yeah.
So, oh well. But no, I could have bet millions of dollars that this was the album that you guys were like,
oh no, I thoroughly enjoyed this one. Yeah.
Well, their next one, Why Do They Walk Rock So Hard? It's good. The next one, Cheer Up, is good too. But Less Than Jake, Hello Rockview, it's different, but it's History of a Boring Town. All My Best Friends Are Metalheads. It's good. Less Than Jake is, I've seen them three times as well there.
I've got another band for you to check out, Carter. I don't know if you would call these guys ska or not. I saw them once in Winnipeg at the Old Albert, and it was just a phenomenal show called the New Duncan Imperials. Have you ever heard of them?
No, never heard of them.
Check out the New Duncan Imperials. I don't remember much of that night, but I remember it was a heck of a good time, and I liked the band. And I'll probably listen to their stuff now and go, "What the heck?" But whenever I hear ska, it reminds me of that night. So there must have been something that made me think of that.
A lot of ska bands use the word like the word ska, and they're like the Skalactites and stuff like that. It's kind of annoying, but
yeah.
Okay. There's rumors of a fourth wave. There's always a rumor of a fourth wave.
I was just going to ask that. So we have, those are there, Carter. And so here you are, you're in quarantine. What order do you start these from start to finish? Where do you start? Where do you finish with these albums?
Wake up with the replacements. Then move on to Butch Walker, I think, in the morning. Yeah. And then the sun's out afternoon, you know, it's starting to heat up in real life here. So Real Big Fish is sort of a summer band, I think. So go out there. Yeah. Listen on the deck, maybe, to some turn the radio off. And then night, I guess, sort of the German dance club of Octung Baby there. Move on to that. And then Illinois is a good album to listen to in bed. That's my favorite place to listen to that album.
Yeah.
It's tough to make it to the end because it's pretty long. But I don't know, sort of sensory deprivation in that album. That's sort of where you're able to hear it, I think, at its most, because there's a lot going on at times. And you sort of need to be fully locked into some of the songs anyway. Some are plodding banjo with the trumpet over top, but some of them there's a little bit going on there. So
I think if I was set in a quarantine, I was with your five albums, Carter.
Yep.
I would play them in the same order, I think.
But Sufjan, while you're asleep.
Well, I would fall asleep to it, right?
Oh yeah, okay. Oh, good.
Okay, so now we're going to move to the fun part. Like, it hasn't been fun already, but the part in the episode.
The embarrassing one.
The embarrassing one. Now, you told me I wasn't allowed to Google, so no. I don't know anything about this. Lost Prophets, The Betrayed.
Yeah, so they're a Welsh post-hardcore metalcore band. Okay. That's, I don't know, it's tough to put them into a genre there. Because they can get heavy, mm. Or like they have incredible pop sensibility as well. They're pretty big there. They had in 2004 their album was number 4 on the British charts. 2006 they had number 1, and this one hit number 3 there. And the thing, they all sound really good. They're the opposite of a lot of these albums I've mentioned before. Is the production's insane. Some of the biggest guitars ever, like just a wall of sound, like a true, like Phil Spector talks about the wall of sound. This is honestly like just like probably like 30 guitars doubled on each side, panned, and it's just a huge sound.
So what makes this embarrassing to you then?
Yeah, that's, well, is Carter cheating? Is this his sixth one? He's added? You know, there's been concerts, double albums, greatest hits. You know, what did Carter cheat? But no, unfortunately, while I absolutely love their four albums there, no, it's incredibly embarrassing. Ian Watkins is the singer. He's, you know, on, especially over in the UK, on the cover of all the magazines there. And along with, you know, stardom comes groupies, right? Yep. So unfortunately Ian wasn't really interested in the groupies. He was frick, this gets dark, you guys. He was interested and this is the number one, you know, band with the number one album in the UK. He wasn't interested in the groupies. He was unfortunately interested in their children and 1-year-old babies.
I see. I'm just googling them up here. Yeah.
So the judge sentenced him to 29 years and, quote, this case plunged into the new depths of depravity.
Wow.
And the investigating officer said Ian's potentially the most dangerous sex offender he'd ever seen. So when your favorite band that happens to, and yeah, you've got t-shirts and hoodies and the guitar books, how to play, like, you know, all the albums and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That gets to be pretty embarrassing. And,
yeah, I can see this.
Terrible. Yeah. Yeah, sorry to get it dark there, but the, you know, normally it's like, oh, I don't want the shirt anymore, I'll donate it. Like, you can't let someone be homeless walking around in a Lost Prophets hoodie, you know, or something like that. So unfortunately in the garbage can there. So yeah.
Wow, that is
not good.
Quite a story. Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, Michael Jackson, R. Kelly, Jimmy Page, you know, there's, you know, some deniability. You can separate the art from the artist, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe, you know, that didn't happen. But he pled guilty and was in jail for a very long time. So
29 years, holy.
And they use a similar system to us, and that's really hard to get. That's a lot of time in jail.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, the band is really good, but it's a tough listen.
Yeah, I guess.
It took a couple of years before I could listen again, and it's a little weird going back, but they're still great sounding albums.
This is another story that I'm not familiar with at all. So,
yeah, and it didn't. You know, they had a number one hit over in the States, you know, Last Train Home was a number one hit, and they're in video games and stuff like that. But never made any news over here at all. So, yeah, it's embarrassing. It's dark. Yeah,
it is. I'm just reading about them here. It's quite shocking. So,
yeah. But, no.
So what are you gonna do?
We're in a downer, yeah.
What are you gonna do? Yeah. Well, I'm gonna go put some more ska on and kind of.
Yeah, this is why you need the Real Big Fish, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna try me, Mom, and Morgenthaler again because I like that Francophone ska stuff. And actually, like, I saw them probably about 19. Why I asked about that question was because I think I saw them about 89 or 90 in that area.
Really? Okay.
So they were predicting the third wave of ska.
Yeah, and sometimes French culture drags a little bit behind if you listen to French hip hop or something.
maybe they're ripping
off the two-tone second wave of ska.
I have the cassette of them, and it's the side A and side B are exactly the same. They only had the five songs.
Oh no. Oh well.
Okay. Well, thanks, Carter, for joining us here. Obviously very well versed in your music knowledge and your background stories and whatnot, so it's been a pleasure to have you on.
Well, yeah, no kidding.
Thanks for having me.
It's and for those of you that have never listened to Carter and his other podcasts, here comes some wisdom. Those guys have been doing that for cheap plug. Well, I'm sure you can do the same for us, so Check out Here Comes Some Wisdom. I've been a guest a couple times. We've got to get Clifton on that show, I think.
Yeah.
You're going downhill if you get me.
can we recommend guests for this show?
Sure.
You sure can. Why?
Yeah. I want to hear Clifton's mom on the show.
Oh.
She's awesome. And I want to hear maybe it was her stealing the Guns N' Roses albums. Appetite. Yeah. That's where those guys went.
Just hiding them so she didn't have to listen to them anymore.
Yeah, maybe.
You know what? Yeah. I always used to be so embarrassed, but I just love it right now. You know, whenever I needed to get mom to come pick me up from somewhere, she'd roll up blasting AC/DC.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be like, Mom. All right, let's go.
Well, I think we'll do like the same thing we did with Cam and Levi. We'll get the two of them on, right? We'll do the duel.
I wasn't sure how that would work there, but it was good there with two people, and it worked out well that five. Well, they had seven albums, I guess, but five, like four of them were the same or whatever.
So
that worked out well. And no baby crying in the background.
We managed to get through that. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm gonna thank you again here, Carter. And I don't know. I'm gonna have to figure out. Usually, I like to do that outro song. I haven't really been thinking about that, so I'm gonna have to. After the edit here, come up with something.
Me, myself, and Morgenthaler on there.
I could do that. Sure.
Yeah. Or Scott Sucks. I probably.
Scott Sucks. Do it. I might get a copyright strike from the Boys in Propaganda though. So
yeah. Yeah, fair use, right? I took copyright law in law school there.
Well, then you're representing us.
Yeah, pro bono there.